Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption Podcast. We recap DC TV in a flash. As you may already know, or if you are new to the Ladies with Gumption Podcast, I am sometimes your host, May, and I am here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
And you can find us over on Twitter at DC TV Gumption. You can send us all your lovely thoughts to our email, ladieswgumption@gmail.com. Send us some asks about anything and everything over on Tumblr, ladieswgumption@tumblr.com. Or you can find us all of our audio podcasts over on Podomatic, iTunes, and we are also on Google Play. Facebook has been abandoned, I think. Lord knows, I have not updated it. We did receive some feedback from Joe via email about the Love Boat number 4, and she has a theory about Elicity and their marriage and why it fell off last season. So she thinks that the Arrow writers were not planning to have Oliver and Felicity get married so soon, and that the crossover kind of pushed them towards marriage so that they can have them parallel West Allen, basically. But that afterwards, the writers lost their drive, and because it was fast-forwarded, so they didn't know what to do after they got married, versus, like, West Allen had the repetition of We Are the Flash and so on. So she thinks even though that they're in a bad place right now, the writers will actually be able to have the slow burn next season so they can go back to being solid again. What are your thoughts on this?
I actually kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. And she was thinking that apparently it was Berlanti's idea, and I feel like we heard that as well, but I don't know if that was just political
correctness. Guggenheim mentioned that. Guggenheim
threw Greg under the bus, basically.
Yeah, because we know it was Greg or Guggenheim's idea.
I don't know if it was necessarily Berlanti's idea that he brought it up, or he just agreed with it when Guggenheim brought it up, but either way, it was put in the crossover before I think the Arrow writers' room was ready to go down that route. So I think I would agree with Joe. And if season 7, we see not an immediate reunion of them, whether Oliver's in jail or not, but even outside of jail, you know, if they take some time for Felicity to be mad and kind of like step out on her own, and then gradually bring them back into the forefront, then Joe's right.
Yeah, I agree with that as well, especially since they have Beth Schwartz now running the show, and we'll kind of get to see what she thinks about the ship. Probably within the first few episodes, we'll get a vibe, and probably by December, we can update everyone on how that's going.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I basically think that at this point, it's all in Beth and the new writer's hands. So it could, you know, it almost doesn't matter what's come up to this point, except that there's probably, like, there's only a certain amount that you can stretch it. Mm-hmm. So if they're going to want to make Elicity, like, really live up to its name, you know, as the biggest ship or, you know, whatever, like, live up to its fan base, really, then they are going to, like you guys said, break it down and have Felicity have some real issues with Oliver's behavior so they can work on making that better.
Right.
Instead of just going in that same, I don't know, kind of like, it's not really a vicious circle, it's like a limp circle where they don't, you know, they have these issues, but they don't really acknowledge them, and Oliver just gets to keep trucking along how he is.
Yeah.
And Felicity just gets to be a great stepmom. So hopefully that won't be the case next season.
If she doesn't bring it up at all, then the ship is dead.
Well, I think it's another reason why I don't see an Elicity baby anytime soon, because that's just, like, jumping another, you know, fast-forwarding another, like, entire conversation and all of that kind of stuff. And it would back up Emily's point of view that she doesn't want that either at the moment, because Felicity was so underutilized, ignored throughout much of last season, I think, because of the whole fast-forward thing. So if they bring it back a little bit and build her up some more, I could see maybe towards the end of the season, especially if it's, we don't know if it's the last season of Arrow or not, but if it is, then I would assume any kind of, you know, baby thing to be at towards the end. And so they could use most of the season to kind of stabilize the ship, I think.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you, Joe, for your feedback. We truly appreciate it. We haven't heard from you in a while. We also got feedback from Ivy, our friend Ivy, who has taken a permanent break from Twitter, and that's sad to me. but she...
We miss you!
Yes! But I understand, because I have also been, not permanent break, but like less on Twitter, because it raises my blood pressure. She sent in some feedback about our Love Boat podcast, and she was surprised at how much she agreed with us. Ivy, please. she thinks that there was, well, first of all, she's not a fan of the Elicity relationship, and she's annoyed that there were two crossovers that went over their drama, and then they wrote the ship as an afterthought. And she's kind of right. Like, even in the, was it two crossovers ago when they had that big fight and then they broke up? So it was kind of like a mess after that. Mm-hmm. And then this one where the ship kind of like, you know,
hijacked the entire storyline. Yeah, you know.
Basically. And then sort of died a slow death towards the end.
A living death, really.
Yes. And then she's annoyed that Elicity is now basically Felicity as not Connor Hawke's stepmother. but she thought it was interesting because if you compare the West Allen and Elicity prison arcs, that the writers on Flash emphasized West Allen's partnership and showed how the ordeal affected their marriage versus Arrow, which did not really do that. And she's convinced that Stephen Amell kind of hijacking his scenes with Emily, that it just confirms that Elicity's only popular because of Emily and her charm, basically. She does pose some interesting questions to us because she says she loves our writing and we love yours, Ivy, so thank you very much. And she was wondering if we could share anything that we are working on or that we would want to work on. And also, if we could write an article for Shithority and an article about representation, what would we focus on and why?
Sexy. Well, I am working on a, basically just like, write-up of the Tornado Twins in the comics and how they could utilize that on the show. There you go. I'm working on that. And the same thing that I wanted to work on forever, which is the Highlander theory. Women, the one special woman in every fandom. So there you go. That's something I want to work on.
I am in the process of getting some stuff approved to, like, a couple of columns, one of which is not mine, but I'm helping with. And one of them is about, I guess, ships, I can say. But I also have a couple... I pitched something about the Flash and specifically how the media has treated Iris and how the media really feeds into it. Like, I wanted to just write about the media's bias, basically. So, waiting to hear on that. And then just, I don't know, I have, like, a lot of ideas that I've written down. Hopefully you'll see some of them before the end of August.
Well, unlike these two, who are, like, professional writers, I hate writing. I can do it, but I, like, there's all these ideas in my head, and then when it comes time to, like, take them out of my head and then put them onto a screen or onto paper, I just, like, completely blank out, and, you know, it's like, a process. And I think part of the reason, because I recently started for writing for With an Accent, and I reviewed their Black Lightning episodes for them. And part of that is just I wanted to kind of challenge myself and force myself to write under pressure and on a deadline. And fortunately, it's something that I like. So that always helps when you like something that you have to write about. I guess if
it
I,
definitely helped.
I guess if I wanted to choose an elective writing piece, and I know Ivy has pushed me about it before, but I guess like my like compensation theory on how it came up when I was watching The Flash, season 4, episode 9, the Christmas episode, where Caitlin got coddled so much. She had like 4 times people telling her, "You're a special snowflake," basically. But in that same episode, when Iris was having issues and having to choose, she got a suck it up buttercup speech from Harrison Wells, even though Harrison also was one of those people that gave Caitlin like a "You're a special snowflake" kind of thing. So, and my theory behind that is that Caitlin gets so much positive reinforcement within the narrative because she's not getting that from the one person that really counts, which is the main hero, which is Barry. So Iris gets Barry's positive reinforcement, but he's practically the only one she gets from, and that upsets a large portion of the fan base that don't want Iris and Barry together. They want to uphold the white woman, who is Caitlin, and because the writers won't give them what they want there, they compensate for that by giving Caitlin so much reinforcement everywhere else. And you can see it in some other places as well. I guess I feel like I need more examples on that. I know Star Wars for sure, and the whole second movie, The Last Jedi, was a huge compensation for fandom that wants to see Kylo and Rey together, because that's just not what overall is going to happen. And so, like, that entire movie was compensating them for something that they are ultimately never going to get. So I guess looking, I would have to really look and get more examples of things like that, but that would probably be something, most interesting thing that I want to write about.
Yeah, I also really want to write about, and I wrote this down 2 days ago, so thank you for reminding me, about like Supergirl's issues with how they have treated women of color, or how they've basically ignored their existence by casting people who are not. Because I think it's a problem, and I know we've talked about it on the podcast, but I just like to delve more into it as well. So more to come from us, ladies. Thank you, Ivy, for your feedback. We always appreciate hearing from you. So one day, if you ever come back to Twitter, just let us know. moving into the Girls Inc. campaign, it has reached over $8,000, $8,681 when I checked it about an hour ago. So well done, everyone. And a special, special shout out to West Allen Hugs for truly putting all of this together and basically steering the I Stand for Candace Patton ship towards the $10,000 goal, which I think we will reach now, hopefully before the end of next week. So if you can keep giving, whether it's $10, $5, $15, whatever you can afford, there's plenty of great gifts that are being given out. I know there's like a little, they were giving out Iris Speedster jacket.
Yeah, it's a gift card, I think, from like the website, and they have two now, so two people can win a Speedster jacket. The first goal is to reach $416, and once they do that, then they can unlock the second jacket. So I'm not sure how much that fundraising page has right now, but if you want a chance to get that Speedster jacket, and it's a cool looking jacket, please donate to I think it's Speedster Iris. If you check West Allen Hugs, her Tumblr page, you can probably find it and find the specific page to go to donate and write "ready to sit up" in the comments, and then you can be entered to win Iris's Speedster jacket from season 4, episode 16.
Yes, and lots of thick gifts as well. So, you know, put in your requests, give some money to a good cause, and thanks so much for everyone who's been donating. On to news, we have the Hashtag Show released some Arrow casting call breakdowns, and one of them is for, so there are three. The first one is under the name Dover, who is a male in his 30s to 40s and is teased as a physically intimidating player. Even though he may not be the brightest person in the room, anyone who is in his presence will feel incredibly small. Then there is Leah, a 30-something woman who is a world-class mercenary who was born to be a leader. She has a toolbox of skills, and you will see why she's known all across the world, basically. And then finally, there's a woman named Angeline. These are probably not their real names. And she's described as a diverse woman in her 30s. She's a fierce fighter despite her small stature. And she's experienced in stealth and is able to wipe out buildings filled with foes all by herself before she is gone like a ghost. So who do we think these three people are and who they actually be playing? I think the post talks about Angeline potentially being Batwoman.
Batwoman, yeah. And I think that seems, to me, that's pretty clear. Like, just the idea of being gone like a ghost. Like, you know, whenever you turn around and Batman's gone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds. And that makes me think that Leah is going to be one of Batwoman's adversaries. She has this, like, ex-girlfriend who's sort of a mercenary of sorts. That, like, runs or is part of this, I don't even remember what it's called, but, like, some, like, deathy cult, you know, gun-running whatever nonsense. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that could be that person.
I agree with that. It makes it sound like that she'll be a recurring character on Arrow, though, so that's interesting.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. If they're using the crossover to launch her and the intro is through Arrow, then they kind of need her to be introduced up to that point.
Precisely.
True, true. Other news is Barry is joining the Ray on CW Seed, which is strange because his outfit is different than Nazi Barry, so this is our Barry, but there's two Barrys, and it's very confusing.
it's weird also because a lot of people were talking about in the comments, and it's true, that he's wearing Barry's old suit. So, like, when is this Barry? First of all, there's an evil Barry that's supposed to be in this show, and then you're adding our Barry, which is that's what I'm assuming, because otherwise, how? Unless they flipped Nazi Barry, and now he's good, I don't know.
I guess that's possible.
Or he was a spy all along.
That would be the best option.
That would be the best, yeah. But we'll see.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that. Hopefully it is that he's not evil, because that would be amazing.
Yeah, honestly, I haven't even watched the first season, so I can't really tell you what was happening or the context of anything.
In final news, April Bowlby is reprising her role as Elastawoman, and she will be on Doom Patrol, which will be on DC Universe streaming.
Yeah, she'll be introduced in Titans, and then so will the Doom Patrol also, so I guess that she'll use that episode to launch her into Doom Patrol as well. So either that or she's like Claire from the Defenders Marvel Universe, and she just hops around on shows.
Oh. That would be funny. Although, I always feel bad for Claire, but that's an entirely different...
That's a different podcast.
That's a different podcast. this week, we will be talking about the DC Animated Universe, where we will discuss Ninja Batman, or Batman Ninja, and DC Superhero Girls, which is a web series. And we will also
dislike everything. Everything is beneath our standards.
This is a short podcast. We hated it all.
Damn it. We will discuss our likes and our dislikes. So first up is Superhero Girls, and Jessica will take it away with the overview of the show and as our host.
Thanks, May. So if you don't know, this is episode 45 called Culture Class / Late for Class. And as May said, that we're going to be discussing Ninja Batman and DC Superhero Girls. Superhero Girls is a really cute kind of web animated show. And there are the original set of six girls that they chose to highlight: Wonder Woman, Katana, Bumblebee, Poison Ivy, Harley Quinn, and who was the sixth one?
Supergirl?
No, because Supergirl...
No, she didn't show up until season two.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And it wasn't Batgirl, because she wasn't officially in there. But I'm pretty sure that there were six. And I just am blanking on the sixth girl.
Obviously, one of them was not highlighted that much.
Obviously, yeah. Maybe it was five. I don't know. So, you know, it's set in Superhero High, which is in Metropolis. And Amanda Waller is their school president. Grodd is the vice principal. And they are, you know, just regular girls going to high school and saving the world one day at a time. If you want to watch their really cute episodes, only maybe like 3 minutes a piece, I think the first season is probably like the shortest season, but it's a nice, fun kind of show, and it's about girls' empowerment and everything like that, and friendships, and, you know, finding who you are and yourself.
Fighting evil by moonlight, winning love by daylight.
Exactly. Never run from a real fight. They are the one called Superhero Girls. So, there are 4 seasons of this show, and we did watch all 4 seasons. So we can start by breaking down what we liked about the show, the concept, whether it's the concept, the characters, character arcs. You can go by seasons, you can go in general, anything you want. What did you like? What do you like about the Superhero Girls world?
Take it away, Tati.
All right. Hopefully before construction sounds happen again. Exactly. I'm going to go in a totally haphazard order, but I really liked the introduction of Wonder Woman in season one. It's sort of like the fish out of water coming from Themyscira, having to get acclimated to not just like, you know, the quote, like the real world, but also Superhero High in general. I thought it was like a cute and clever take on her actual origin story, right? Coming from Themyscira to the world of man. And I also really enjoyed her friendship, you know, roommateship with Harley Quinn. It was unexpected, but it brought out the best in both of the characters, I think. Like, we got to see Diana be, like, really patient and still a little naive, while Harley was, like, had some good intentions, but a very unorthodox delivery of them. So, it was a fun dynamic. I also liked the moments that Bumblebee was given to shine early on. And it's nice because she's not really around that often in the comics. So, it's nice to see her get several different facets, especially that she gets to be both, like, nurturing to the other girls, but also she gets to be silly and, like, have her own little, like, klutzy moments or, you know, moments of embarrassment. I also liked the idea of turning Poison Ivy from, you know, a misanthrope who uses plants against people into, like, a more of a socially awkward person who gets along with plants really well, but still protects, like, people from plants and plants from people when necessary, right? So that was a nice way of incorporating her into the school. I also like the running joke that started off with Wonder Woman being the one-of-a-kind catch, and then in season two, Supergirl was suddenly one-of-a-kind catch, and Wonder Woman was like, wait a second, I thought that was me. And then even in season four, they were like, oh, Jessica, you'll be a one-of-a-kind catch. And I was like, okay, LOL. Although, we never saw Jessica again after the one-of-a-kind catching of her, but that's fine. All right. I also liked Supergirl's introduction. I thought, like, you know, the idea that she doesn't have control of her powers, and so she needs to go to the school to sort of start learning how to use them, was nice. And I would have liked to see a little bit more of that, but that's fine. Also, there was a part where Batgirl and Supergirl were fighting over the cake, but then, like, they realized that they could just split the cake, and then it was too late, and Harley ate it. I feel like that was, like, emblematic. I guess that one, like, just stood out to me as, like, it's a life lesson, right? Because early on, especially the early seasons, which I realized, are like, every episode is like a life lesson, right? So you shouldn't fight over the cake when you can both just share the cake, because otherwise someone else will eat your cake, okay? It's good. It's smart. But anyway, I also like that the boys just make cameos, pretty much, right? They get to be just, like, somewhat helpful or just stand in the background, but they're never really in danger of taking over the story, which is very rare. It's not very often that you see that. So that's good. But, you know, that being said, despite being glad the boys weren't around very much, I enjoyed, like, the split second ships, some of them, like Carol mooning over Hal for 2 seconds, or Diana protecting Steve from Harley at the coffee shop. That was cute. I think there's, like, one moment where, like, she, like, whooshes past him, and he's like, oh, she always takes my breath away, or something like that.
Yeah, that was like, so cute.
I get it. That was really adorable. Anyway, that's all. And of course, because I have a one-track mind, I'm like, I can't wait for Barry to see Iris at the coffee shop, or, you know, reporting with Lois or some shit, and then have a crush on her. Thank you. I'm waiting. Anyway. I also liked the Frankenplant episode. where her Ivy's like plant was kind of like a wild dog. It's like Frankenstein, the Frankenstein plant. And I thought it was a really good episode of development for her. Clearly, I liked Ivy a lot. I really like when Ivy gets good stories. I like when Katana gets to do stuff, which is not often, but she's really enjoyable when she does. And even poor Cheetah gets those moments of like trying, like she wants to be here, but she doesn't know how to do it. So again, it's like a good, twist on their comic book character, putting them in, putting, you know, different kinds of characters in the story in a way that works. And also some of the cameos were really fun, especially Croc and King Shark were my favorite cameos. And I really liked the Riddler episode as like low key, you know, diatribe on toxic masculinity and rape culture and like how you don't just get to pursue the girl because you think that she works for you, right? Like he does this like whole series of riddles and endangering people just to show that like, oh, see, you're good enough for me because you solved this. And she's like, okay, first of all, I don't want to be good enough for you. And second off, why would you think I like it that you hurt people that I like, stupid? So yes, that was a good episode. When Lena showed up in season 3, I put that in the positives, but I don't really have anything positive to say about that. Like, when I was like, oh, Lena's here, and then everything else is negative.
And so I guess it's okay.
I thought the introduction of Waller being task force, like having a task force X, even though it was like totally different, but I like that it brought us Big Barda, it gave Katana more to do. And they kind of made it cute. I don't know. It was a little weird. I guess we'll talk about Waller more in the other half. Anyway, when we got to see Themyscira, and then Ares. Okay, I loved Ares like becoming a pacifist. That was awesome. Ares becoming a pacifist. And that entire everything that happened with Ares on Superhero Girls was better than everything that happened with Ares in the Wonder Woman movie for DCEU. So good job, Superhero Girls.
Accurate.
And I liked a lot of the different unexpected team ups. I especially liked when Catwoman makes appearances and got to, stealing Ares' necklace, and then also the time when they thought that she was a cat burglar, but really her cat was a cat burglar. Also amazing. Both amazing times. Sort of finally, just more like season 4, I really liked Jessica Cruz's anxiety being incorporated as part of her appearance, her little arc in season 4. They really did well with introducing her. And it would have been nice to see more of her after they introduced her. But anyway, Mira and Miss Martian, for 6 minutes, they had a great friendship, and that was beautiful 6 minutes. also, Raven's little arc. Like, there was a lot of great little arcs in the last season, in season 4. Yeah. Everyone working together to stop Trigon, I think that's her name, her abusive demon dad.
Yeah.
And Kara getting to inspire her and, like, give that life lesson on how it's not the powers, it's how you use them. That was probably, that and Jessica Cruz's stories were the best part of season 4, IMO. And of course, Steve and Diana dancing, because I already said I like the ship moments. Yay!
I feel like I truly missed some of these moments, because during season 2, it was very late and I was dozing off. I'm like, man, I need to go back and watch this, and I never did. So some of this is new to me. but I agree with what a lot of Tati said. I really liked the theme song. I thought it was really catchy, and now it's stuck in my head forever. So it's like, get your cape on. I like the introduction to Wonder Woman as well, and Supergirl especially, since they're the ones that actually got true intros. I also enjoyed the show's sense of togetherness, working together despite differences of opinion sometimes, though a lot of the time it was just difference in personality, and the overall inclusion of several well-known DC ladies. I like that we got to see Amanda Waller. I think I disagree with Tati on this. I actually like to see Amanda Waller and Gorilla Grodd be principal and vice principal, because the fact that the superhero high school is truly them being there like that is ironic, given their usually villainous backgrounds. So I thought that was
fun. Even some of the students, too. So it's kind of like, is this really a superhero high school?
Yeah, some of them are like, these are villains.
Like, where is high school?
And I did love, there was an episode where Grodd's friends tried to save him from captivity from the humans. I thought that was really funny. I also love the friendship between Wonder Woman, Supergirl, and Batgirl. Especially, I think that they were like a good trio. And I like that we got to see a lot of other great characters pop up on the side, like Cyborg, Barry, Steve, Beast Boy. And I agree with Tati that they never tried to take over the obviously female-centered show. Hawkgirl and Frost are much better in this series than in live action, right down to their suits and personalities. I especially love Jessica Cruz's episode because it incorporated her fear and anxiety, like Tati was saying. And there was like a lesson in all of that, that heroes aren't without fear, but that they learn to rise above it and do great things, which I really loved. And I really love that she was also Lois's camera assistant. And I loved seeing Lois as well pop up here and there, even though it got confusing as to whether she actually attended the high school or not.
Yeah.
And then Thunder and Lightning in their little cute sisterly episode, and they got a chance to shine for a bit. And then the high school just felt like a place that could actually exist, and I found it hilarious that all the citizens barely batted an eyelash whenever they had Giants or Sinestro running amok. But out of all the villains, they turned into decent people on the show. I have to say Poison Ivy's change was my favorite. Seeing Starfire interact with Blackfire was sweet. Bumblebee was great during the first season when she had the most screen time, and that we got to, like, I like that we got to visit Themyscira as well. And Diana's interactions with Ares were really good, and I love that he became the god of peace after they had him wear the medallion. I also like the introduction of Lena, even though the rest of it wasn't that great. But for, I think for me, it was like story purposes specifically. And then having Steve Trevor be the waiter at their local diner was adorable because it kept him around, even though he didn't go to school. It didn't seem like he went to the school, obviously. So it just felt like the show's biggest nod to a main comic ship when he was around. And I love that we also got to see Jim Gordon be around as well and be there for Barbara, and that, you know, him being part of the PTA was cute. And just besides seeing all the characters interact and team up, it was just nice to see some of the women who are usually doing villainous things help out, do good, and try to aim for being superheroes as well. I just think the show's sweet and fun, and all the ladies have gumption, and I'm still singing that damn theme song in my head.
Well, I didn't write down true notes for this because I was up to the very last second, like, watching, like, the rest of the show. But I agree with, like, what a lot of you guys have said. And I think, like, the show is really obvious. Like, once you get into season four, it's very clear that the Trinity is Wonder Woman, Supergirl, and Batgirl in the series. So it's kind of taking the original DC Trinity and then giving you like the superhero girls version of that, and the way that they set it up as well, because the first season was about Wonder Woman, and the second season brought in Kara and incorporated her a lot, and then the third season brought in Babs and incorporated her quite a bit as well. And so as you go through the seasons, you see the three of them become like the center characters, and they, because they have like a lot of combos with them, just three of them, more than some of the other characters. So there's good and bad to that, but I think it's clear like how it's set up that they are the Trinity. I liked all of the like the little team up moments. I also liked Wonder Woman's intro, and it's kind of funny because in season one, Babs was not a student. They actually said that she was not a student, that she was just like working the tech person. She got a job. And then in the second season, she was somehow a student, but they never explained it.
Right, and her dad knew that she was Batgirl. Like, defying, you know? I thought what they were going to do was have Barbara Gordon's just the IT person, and then, oh, Batgirl's a student. And they're...
The dual life, but no, they did not do that. I really enjoyed, you know, Bumblebee having a lot of moments, like you said, in the first season. I think that they, I'll get to that in the other section. But I also liked that, you know, I agree with May that I like that Waller and Grodd are like the principal and vice principal. I just think it's kind of funny. And the fact, Red Tornado being a teacher, Wildcat is a teacher, those like little... There's a whole lot of little, like, Easter eggs and nods throughout the whole show. I saw Barry talking to Cisco in the hallway. I'm like, that's Vibe! So Cisco goes to Superhero High. I saw Blue Beetle. Gar. Like, there's a whole lot of characters, like, in the background that I'm assuming that the show hopes that you don't notice, because in season four, Raven was in school before they introduced Raven and her character. So it's like, she already goes to school there. What?
Whoops.
Oh. Because you weren't supposed to see her in the background, that's why. My other big thing that I liked about the show is when they do those certain character arcs, I loved Ravens. I liked Starfire when she was she is the adorable because she's just so like positive and kind of like, you know, a little bit clueless as to how Earth words work and all this kind of stuff. I like her team up with Cyborg. And I really love that almost by season four, you get almost all of the Titans in the show in some kind of way incorporated. I like that all the girls are friends. There's not a lot of, there's like fun competition, but there's not a lot of like cattiness. And even with the villains, they are villains somehow going to a superhero high school, but they're not completely good. Like Cheetah, for example, and her dynamic with Wonder Woman and how she wants to be a hero, but not necessarily for the right reasons. So it's kind of like toes that line a little bit, I think is really interesting the way that they do it. What else was I going to say?
Oh, I wanted to mention, though, what's funny about Batgirl's identity before you continue is that I thought it was hilarious that she was wearing her mask at the pool party. Like, she was, everyone was wearing bathing suits and was unmasked. I'm like, everybody knows who you are. Why are you still wearing a mask?
Oh, Vixen. Vixen made an appearance, and I squealed, and then she disappeared, and we never saw her again. So I wish, like, that would have been incorporated a little bit more. But I like that she showed up, so they know her. Same with Thunder and Lightning. Some of the villains. Oh, some of the villains are some of my favorite people. Giganta, I like how she's not really a villain. She just has, like, anger management issues. And so she's just, like, a little bit of, like, a... she's not, like, a true villain. She's just kind of, like, they tolerate her. Like, come on, you have to, like, calm down. So I like that. I like Killer Moth because he has a lisp. And all he wants is to be, like, Batgirl's best friend. And then, like, evil together. And she's like, no. So I just think they have, like, they take a lot of really... cute moments. They have really nice little twists on classic DC TV villains or dynamics. It's just like a fun show. So now that we've kind of, I've kind of like wandered, meandered around throughout all of the seasons, there were a couple things that I think could be better or I think could be expanded on or that I just flat out didn't like. But what were those things for you guys?
Well, what were they things? Okay, yeah, I didn't like that Katana was part of the credits starting in season one, but it was, like, insulting to me because she had, like, one line in season one, and I was like, where is Katana? What is Katana doing? And it was, the answer was, not enough. But, yeah, she was probably about as well used in Superhero Girls as she was in Suicide Squad, so do better. Also... I would like, it's not really like a dislike, it's just like, I want to see it. I want to see Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn's friendship. Like, I got that in season one, Wonder Woman was the point of view character, and so it was nice that, you know, for that 20-minute season, she and Harley Quinn developed a nice little roommate friendship. But now I want to see what's going on with Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn, all right? The true OTB. Anyway, so yes, it's a web series for children, so I shouldn't be asking these questions. But I did, I was like, why wasn't anyone helping Kara before Control Powers? Like, what was Kara doing that they had to go recruit her and her parents or, like, Clark or anyone wasn't like, maybe we should do something about this? And then I didn't dislike Amanda Waller as the principal, but I was wondering why they had chosen her to be, like, she was, like, a really nice principal, you know, and everyone else had, like, some semblance of their comic personality, even if they were a... villain in the comic and then not a villain here, and she didn't really have that. That's why I was like, why did they do that? And then they brought in Task Force X, and I was like, oh, okay, so they are doing it. It was just not the same. So that's fine. It wasn't a dislike. I was just wondering about it. But anyway.
Patience, Grasshopper.
Exactly. yeah, Harley's accent was, like, going in and out at times. Like, I didn't understand it. Sometimes she sounded like she was almost British, and I was like, I don't know what's going on right now, but that's okay. She's still growing into her accent. She's not sure where in Coney Island she's from yet. and yeah, I was also like, what is Lois? Like, does she go here? Is she just reports on it? Like, who is she in high school? Who hired a high schooler to just be constantly reporting on other high schools? Like, I don't know. So yes, this was my question. I want to know what the regular people high school is that Lois goes to. And if Iris is there too. Because, like I said, I have a one-track mind. So yeah, there's not really much to dislike because, I mean, the episodes are short. Like, that's a dislike, that the episodes are too short. Although when you're binge watching all four seasons in one night, it is very much a like. It's not a dislike at that point. There was that one episode of, like, Hot Girl was, like, you know, she's too eager to be a hero, so she, like, attacked Miss Clayface.
No, I think she's just, like, serious. Like, I actually like that episode.
Yeah?
I forgot to put that in my likes, but I really liked Hot Girl as, like, a ancillary character, because it's just, like, mm-hmm. her whole personality is just, like, hall monitor, I have to be, you know, never let my guard down, ever.
Yeah, I didn't like it. So, I was like, this is a little weird. Like, I don't know. Like, no one pointed out to her, like, that, like, you're being, like, really aggressive, you know? Like, they were like, oh, it's because you're always a hall monitor, whatever. And she's like, oh, okay. And I was like, I feel like she went a little more overboard. She could have gotten a little bit more reprimanded. But anyway. And then she got Hero of the Month right after that. And I was like, has she been Hero of this month? Can we wait?
It's a little classic, like, kid show type situation for her to be in.
Right.
Made sense to me.
And then there was that part where Killer Frost was, like, dumping on all of Bumblebee's ideas before the midterm, but then Bumblebee got an A because of teamwork, so I liked Bumblebee got an A, but I don't know what Killer Frost was doing, or, like, what the point was. She was, like, trying to teach her the right way to do it, but then it was not the right way, because sometimes your way is not the right way, I guess. That was that.
I feel like for that one, Bumblebee was kind of, like, she didn't take it seriously because she knew what she was doing. It was, like, Frost that was, like,
so right. I was just wondering what they were saying about Frost. Like, I was like, what is, why is she here?
Know-it-all. Yes. That's what the lesson was. Don't be a know-it-all.
Don't be a know-it-all. So, yeah.
Because you don't.
And then Starfire and Cyborg, like, when they got Hero of the Month and they had done nothing before that, like, they hadn't got any screen time. And I was like, why don't we get screen time so we can see them be Hero of the Month? There was some times where they do, like, Hero of the Month with, like, a person that they weren't going to show you outside of that. And I was like, oh, okay, thank you for that. The random Flash and Lady Shiva moment. I was like, I'm going to ignore this moment. I'm deleting it from my brain. So, yes. And my least favorite arc was probably the Kryptonite arc. Lena's existence is great, but then she isn't in a wheelchair. So, again, they still did not want to give you disability representation, even in the animated version. And also, there's just, like, I don't know. She's just, like, I guess it's because I'm biased by the other versions, like, when you have a reason for why she's not great in the comics, and when she is great in the show. So then I was like, this was my least favorite version of her. That's all. I liked Thunder and Lightning in a cameo, like Jessica said, but I think that, like, they got a little bit more diverse with cameos in the back half of the show, but they haven't expanded on those characters so much. So they should do that. And yeah, as the show went on, it felt a little less to me about, like, the lessons in the relationships, and it was more about, like, team-ups and villain battles, and I liked the earlier episodes more than that, more so, although I think there were still, like, little arcs, but because it was, like, one, it would be, like, an arc, it's, like, three or four episodes, so then, like, one of those episodes would be, like, the lesson part, and then the other three would be, like, the battle or the team-up, and so I was like, you could have just made that the one episode, and just had, you know, but anyway. And then my final nitpick is just, like, why people always, like, goop and paint? Like, what is happening in these halls? Like, why is there always something to throw on someone? I guess it's just because, you know, children like seeing people throw pies in people's faces, and that's that. That was not the final one, because I was really excited about Jessica Cruz, and I really liked her arc, and then she said, you have the wrong chica, and I was like, why? Why? She speaks Spanish. Exactly. We get it. She speaks Spanish. And yes, Raven's arc was great, but then, like, I don't feel like there was anything about her being an empath. I don't understand what her powers were. She was just kind of, like, super strong, powerful person. And I was like, some of these are part of Raven's skill set, and some of these are not. So it was just kind of, that's all.
My turn. Right. Sorry. I know it's a web series, and it isn't supposed to be long, but I also found it frustrating that none of the bigger stories had any follow-through. Like, when Lena was introduced, she's out there being obviously evil, making kryptonite, and even while the kryptonite creatures show up for another few episodes, Lena's story isn't explored. Like, same with any villain. They just show up, and then it just gets repetitive because there aren't many mini-lessons beyond working together and doing good deeds. So, like, they could have done something. Like, why was Lena making kryptonite? I don't know. She's just evil. Bumblebee got less screen time in seasons 2 to 4, and most of the time I felt like she was only there to let us know that the save the day alarms were going off, which after a while we know what the alarms are for, so there's no need to repeat that. And I just felt like she was ripped off in terms of like being showcased more. And then I think even the Hero of the Month stuff started to taper off, right? Like, I'm not imagining that, because then that's when the overall lesson started to dwindle, when they stopped focusing on that as much. Miss Martian got one episode, and I really wanted more of her. Barry being around was cool, but I'm not gonna lie and say I wasn't waiting for Iris to pop up every time he made an appearance. Lois making an appearance was great, but it was strange to me that Clark isn't mentioned once between her and Kara, and they're in Metropolis, which makes his non-presence stranger. Other than that, I didn't dislike much, but the show definitely needed more inclusion. Thunder and Lightning, like Tati said, they showed up once. It's not good enough, though. And then Katana was kind of sidelined, which is very depressing. And it didn't escape my notice that the leading females were all white either. So moving into season 5, more diversity that's front and center, and perhaps a story thread that can connect the entire season, since they seem to be getting longer, and that could certainly kick up the momentum a notch.
You know what's weird? Well, I guess it's weird but not weird, or however you want to look at it, but I think Clark is already, he's graduated high school, because like when they introduced Kara, they were saying one of the like the perks was that your cousin is, you can be a superhero like your cousin. So Clark already has like that thing, so he must be like fresh out of high school or something. Like maybe he and Hal joined like the next superhero level up or whatever.
That's fair. I accept that.
And I mean, I agree with you. It is weird that, you know, Clark isn't mentioned at all. Bruce, you can say whatever about Bruce since Barb Babs is in high school, but then Dick, where is he? Like, all the Teen Titans are there except for him. And I guess, like, part of it is, you know, introducing him would overshadow Babs, maybe. And that's why that they just keep Babs, or that's why that they don't introduce Clark. But it is kind of odd to see all these Easter eggs and then not see, you know,
they kept them in the background like they did. Yep. Like he was there, but
yeah, you know. Like I don't even, and I'm looking for people in the background. I did not see him at all. other things. I agree. I definitely agree with that, about that. Bumblebee and Katana being kind of underutilized, Katana most of all, especially since she's in the original, and I'm guessing there's 5, because I can just not can think of whoever the other 6 person was supposed to be. But having her be like a center person in the title credits, and then just, I think she had like 1 line in season 1, it's just kind of odd. I kind of disagree with Tati a little bit about Harley, because I feel like Harley is oversaturated in the market anyway, and so I was kind of annoyed that she was Wonder Woman's roommate instead of, I felt like Bumblebee should have been Wonder Woman's roommate, and have Harley with Ivy and develop that kind of crazy relationship, especially since this version of Ivy is a little bit socially awkward. It would have been like a lot more of an interesting dynamic to see Harley kind of pull Ivy out of her plant shell. We got a little bit of that in the 4th and it took like 4 seasons to get like a Harvey Ivy team up, which is 4 seasons too long, I think. I thought Lena, when Lena showed up, I was like, is that fucking Patty? Because she was blonde and she had like glasses and she was in like the IT department or something like that. But it was Lena. And then like Tati said, like she, and I think you said as well, May, she has that one introduction and then you never see her again, and you don't know why she was evil. You don't know why she doesn't like Kara or anything like that. I think the most developed villain dynamic they probably have is Cheetah and Wonder Woman. Going back to Bumblebee and Katana, I just feel like, you know, as I said with the, it was obvious that they're making this into the Trinity with Babs, Kara, and Wonder Woman, Diana. But it just feels like they are, yes, they're the Trinity, but like the whole focus goes in between those three, and then you lose out on some of the relationships with the other girls. And they show up, you know, just enough to say that we are still diverse, but it's not, I don't think Bumblebee ever had like an arc, a character arc that I can remember that was focused on her. Katana definitely didn't. You've got like a lot of great girls in the background, like Lady Shiva and Big Barda. Miss Martian, she was in season one as well and had like a couple of like eep moments when she like disappears, because that's her thing. She's like shy and she disappears. But then they never really talk about it, or they never really get into it. And she didn't have, she even up in season four where she had the team up with Mira, it wasn't really about her. And so you still don't know. For someone, a character that's been there since season one, to still not really know anything about them or their arc is a little weird, I think. I agree with you. I was also annoyed with Frost when she was, like, being a know-it-all to Bumblebee. Actually, like, that was, I think that's probably, like, one of the few Bumblebee-centric episodes that there was. And I would like that Bumblebee was just, like, not listening or not caring about it, because she actually knew what she was doing. So that ended well for me.
Frost is an elitist, even on this show.
Right? that's the character trait that they kept.
I agree with you about the lack of Iris, because it just seems weird that she's not in the show, especially with the rise in popularity of Iris on The Flash, CW with Candace Patton, and the kind of, I just feel like for a girl show that it would be a nice to have like more representation. And I have this whole thing in my head about how she would be introduced, and it'd be like, but then it would also like mean that they would have to focus on Lois as well, which they don't seem to want to do that much. But like in my head, Lois and like Iris, maybe like Iris is a new girl on the scene and they're like competing for stories or whatever. And then like that's how like Barry gets introduced to Iris, and because they're like, she and Lois are competing and he's like tripping him over himself to like impress her in the background. And then like in the whole lesson is like, we don't have to compete for stories, we can work together, and you know, all this stuff. So like in my head, like Supergirl writers, if you listen to this podcast, like that's
I did talk to one of the superhero girl writers at WonderCon about Iris, and she's like, yeah, people are talking about that. We're talking about that in the room. So
season five.
Make it real.
Season five. Like introduce her in the background. And like have, and then like, you know, when they're going out and trying to like solve a story on their own, then Iris can call up Barry to speed them somewhere or something. I don't know. But it can be cute if you let it. I agree with like the length of the episodes. Not so much the length of the episodes, but like the character arcs that start something and then just drop off and you never see it again. Like Jessica Cruz, I thought she was going to be in season four more than she was, because of, it took like three episodes to introduce her, and then you never see her again.
Yeah, her introduction paralleled Wonder Woman's and Supergirl's in the first two seasons, but unlike them, she didn't even get to stick around.
Right, exactly. And so that's, you didn't even see her get into like the very last episode when they were talking about the yearbook. And it was Wonder Woman and Harley going around taking pictures. And that's when you see Jessica. Again, Raven, I thought it was weird that she was in school and then she was just like not in school. To like introduce her, invite her to school. Selena, I don't really know what they're doing with her. Because she's another one. She's a villain. She's not straying far from her villain side from the comics, but they, on the show, they don't really do a lot or anything to kind of highlight her in a way, so it's kind of, sometimes it's kind of wondering, like, why is she there? The fact that Vixen never showed up again. I feel like there should be a supervillain high, because I just think that would be, like, a great parallel. And then, like, superhero high and supervillain high could, like, compete with each other in games.
They have
stuff.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I feel like that's like an end of the year sports tournament, yeah, thing.
The Corriger High School or whatever, the competitive high school run by Sinestro. I feel like that's the closest that they get to it, but not really. But who knows? Mm-hmm. Hopefully season 5 will bring some new things. Oh, I think overall, like, what's your overall impression? Because overall, I think it's a really cute show. And for, like, the length of the episodes and the demographic towards young girls, I think it's a really nice, empowering show that could use a little bit more diversity in terms of storytelling.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, I know several young girls who watch it and who love it, and that has been their introduction to comic books, and that's what's gotten them into that world, you know? So I think that it is great. It's great for young girls and young boys too, right? You know? Because then they'll get to see more of girls being empowered and being treated as equals. And yeah, definitely more diversity in the storytelling and more focus on the different character interactions and lessons that can be learned from that.
Yeah.
I co-sign. It's very, like, it's very fluffy, and it makes you feel good, and it's really nice to that they never stray from focusing on the women. But I also agree that it needs diversity in stories and diversity, or putting more of their characters of color front and center rather than just have them in the background. But besides that, if they can improve on all of that in season 5, I think it's definitely worth a watch. It's, you know, it's great that this has become a good introduction for young girls into comics, because I feel like for me growing up, it was mostly the male-centered shows for comics that I watched. So this is a nice change.
Mm-hmm. Well, moving along, we have our other animated feature that we watched, and this was actually a movie, Batman Ninja. The premise is just what the title says. Actually, Gorilla Grodd creates this time machine. He gathers all of Gotham's supervillains to, I don't know, witness his genius or whatever. And of course, Batman is there to try and stop him, and we find out that some of the other Bat family was in the same area as well. Things go wrong. The time machine activates and throws all of them back into feudal Japan. Batman is just slow because he got there 2 years after everyone else did. And so he's kind of thrown in this world where the villains have taken over the feudal states in Japan. So he's got to reunite with his Bat family. He's got to save feudal Japan from the Joker and work with some people that he didn't think he'd have to work with to fix the time machine and bring them all back to the present, all without his trusty, handy gadgets, because technology does not exist unless it's Gundam robots in feudal Japan. So this is pretty cool kind of blending of cultures with, you know, the DC Batman verse with the cultural elements of Japan. What did we like about this movie?
May.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I really love the overall animation for the film. Not some of the particular character looks I know that Jessica also had an issue with, but I'll get to that later. Just the way that the film looked was well done overall. I loved the setting of feudal Japan, and especially all things having to do with the Joker and Harley Quinn. They just, like, they were kind of very central to the film, and I like that, and it's easy to see that the animator's preference when it comes to which villain they favored, just based on the details that they put into Joker and Harley Quinn versus, like, everybody else. I think the scene wherein Jason finds them as farmers was an abrupt change when compared to the rest of the film, but it was probably the best part and the one that resonated in terms of making me actually feel anything. I loved when Nightwing made his appearance, because that's my son, and he saved Bruce from death because he clearly didn't have a good head on his shoulders in this movie. I lost my train of thought. Seeing the rest of the Bat Boys was nice and brought me joy. And Catwoman keeping it a bit flirty with Bruce throughout the film was fun. The introduction to the villains and how they ruled over the different areas of Japan looked really cool. And then some of the fight scenes were really well executed, even though there seemed to be a lot of explosions everywhere. I feel like on an aesthetic level, the movie just looked good and stood out among all the other DC animated films and its use of Japan's architecture and cultural designs.
Yes. I agree. No, I really liked the aesthetics of the film. I thought, you know, the backgrounds and, you know, the architecture especially. And, yeah, like, land country themes, like the landscapes. You know, yeah, landscapes, sunsets, you know, the sky, nature, all of that was beautiful. It was really good. And in terms of characters, I thought the Joker was particularly amazing, and I really liked his voice actor too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I thought he was pitch perfect. The title sequences, introducing the villains, and then also there was that one explosion where Batman was like disappearing.
Oh yeah,
that before was really like cool. Fading out the next scene. I really liked that one. Yeah, there was a lot of really cool costumes, and once again, I liked Poison Ivy's character design a lot. I always like seeing Poison Ivy, basically. And she was like, yeah, anyway, she was like green, right?
Yeah, she was green, she had pink hair.
Yeah, I love that. Anyway, love Poison Ivy. And I liked having like most of the Bat family together, although they could have been more family in their Bat family-ness, but that's all right. It was nice to see them. I also really liked the idea of Batman being stripped of technology, right? Like, who is he without his tech, right? Because he is also the world's greatest detective, who's not Sherlock Holmes. So, and sometimes stories forget that. So it was nice that they brought up the idea that he wasn't going to have the tech available. And he also had to rely on his family, which was great, right? I always like the point that Batman is not actually alone as he tries to make himself. He always is surrounded by family, from Alfred to all of the Robins, and even to Catwoman sometimes. I really liked the sequence where they were like, oh, let's learn about ninja techniques and also Japanese diet. It looked good and it was informative. So I enjoyed that. Yeah, that scene where Jason Todd found like Farmer Joker and Harley and then he's like beating them up, like it was like super fucking weird, but it was emotional. And then Joker's laugh, like as they were like leaving, and then he starts turning mad again. And I was like, this was as the scene travels up to the sunset that I was saying looks really beautiful. That was probably, you know, the most visually appealing / visceral, you know, evocative moment in the film. Oh, yeah. When Poison Ivy was like, multitude of flowers, transformation. I was like, Sailor Moon time. And then the others did it, but they weren't as good as hers. So hers was the best. That is all.
I, like, this whole concept of Ninja Batman and, you know, them getting thrown across time to feel Japan and like the enemies are the warlords is like the greatest concept. Like, why has this not been done before? Kind of thing. Cause it just feels like Batman and ninjas go very well together. So I'm glad that someone like actually realized they're like, man, we should put this in a movie. I agree with you guys that I love the landscape and the cinematography, and I love all of it really feels like an anime, like a Japanese level anime, with all of the, of course it does, because they hired a lot of those writers and colorists and everything like that. But I just like that they chose that style as part of the concept of the whole Batman ninja. So it's not just Batman in Japan, but we draw it with an American lens. It's Batman in Japan from Japanese lens. So I thought that was really cool. I, as May mentioned, I do have some issues with some of the character designs. But I did love, like Tati did, like the introduction of all of the villains and where they landed up in the different feudal states in Japan. I thought those were excellent. Joker's ninja character design is probably like my favorite of the movie, because I just think that he was like so spot on. And I think May is right that you can definitely tell which characters were the animators' favorites. Like, I think the animators like Joker and Harley even more than Batman, to be honest, because they were like just like the best. All the details, and then the scene in the forest when Batman first confronts the Joker, and they're having, because it's like a classic. I've seen this done before as well as in the Boondocks, because Aaron McGruder, I think this is how you pronounce the name, draws a lot of inspiration from Japanese anime as well, and his title character, Huey. And there's a scene in the Boondocks when Huey's, like, fighting in the woods. So this is, like, really kind of a Japanese take. And then from an actual anime, like, Rurouni Kenshin, there's, like, a lot of, like, the fighting in the woods kind of scenes. This very, like, classic thing that you see in different animes. And then from the American side, when they take inspiration from that, a lot of the times they take inspiration from you see those scenes like pop up in other animes that are taking inspiration from Japanese anime. And Batman Ninja is no exception, and it was beautiful, and I liked it. I love, like, he's, like, Joker kind of, like, set as in a Japanese warlord from that time would sit, and he had, like, the big old saucer with Harley pouring the sake, and just, all of these little details were amazeballs. So, moving on from that, I also thought that Harley was really well done in this movie, and her character design. Other villains, I can understand the need to insert Gorilla Grodd because you needed like that sci-fi element of how do you get Batman back in time into the feudal Japan era. And I don't think there's really like a bat villain that I know of that could do that. But the Joker Harley versus Batman dynamic is what makes the film, really, really makes the film. I do wish we got to see more of the other villains. They had really cool introductions, but we never went to any of those feudal states. I think there's like an offhand line that Jason went researching and maybe he went to those feudal states, but we didn't get to go. I would like to see more world building and more of that, but there's only 125 minutes to do this. So they had to cut some stuff out, I'm sure. Let's see. The Gundam castles, because, you know, you can't have Japanese anime without, like, Gundam robots. So I thought that was, you know, it's like another one of those, you know, iconic Japanese anime influences in the film. And it didn't really make sense how Batman didn't have technology, but they could have Gundam castles. But it still works because you get to see, like, all of the different, and each warlord villain had their own style of castle. And then they all, like, connected in a Power Ranger suit type way into one, like, giant Gundam castle, which is great. I also like the Red Hood scene where Jason Todd tracks down Harley in the Joker, because that shift in character design and anime style is another iconic kind of thing that you see in a lot of different animes when, you know, it kind of like alerts you to the fact that you're not in the same realm as the rest of the movie. So it's kind of that change in character design shifts and tells you that, oh, either this is a dream or this is not reality or there's something off here. And I think just the style of that whole sequence is really, really great. And towards the end, when you see him, the Joker, you know, the red is on his lips again, and then the whole kind of like dissonance of the scene as you go back to the real world, quote unquote, it's just really cool to see visually. And I liked Jason's, the adaption of his red hood into a feudal Japan. It's like a red woven basket. And I looked it up because I had seen these baskets before, like recently when I was watching like a news program about it's like a Zen Buddhist sect that they wore those woven baskets around their head. And so I think Jason's design was a nod to that. I wish they had explained it or like hinted at it or said something about it, but they didn't. But I like that they included some of those different traditional looks that's not just the same. Because like Bruce had the priest look that he was rocking for like a hot second. And Selena had her traditional kimono that she was wearing, so I like a lot of those little artistic touches. So now that we've got a way with talking about how pretty this movie looks, what are the other little things that we did not like about Batman Ninja?
I mean, for the world's greatest detective, Batman didn't really act like it in this movie. Like, he was going in half-assed most of the time. He was overly reliant on technology, which he is, but he was just making bad calls left and right. And I don't think it felt like a Batman movie per se, and that there was nothing really personal about it. Like, even when the clan told him about the prophecy, it all felt empty. And mm-hmm. The worst part was when Bruce was all like, I get it now, like during his little moment when he's staying on the cliff. And he was having an epiphany. It just felt completely flat because no one cared. No one cared, Bruce.
Don't try to push him off that cliff. Like, shut up.
Exactly. Like, there wasn't a clear trajectory for his personal journey, and everything just happened to him. Like, if the film had begun with him wrestling with something, someone criticizing him for using too many gadgets, or realizing something about the Joker even, then coming to certain conclusions later on in the film would have made more sense. But overall, the film just lacked heart, and, like, there weren't any family moments, and the plot was just really an excuse to just go to feudal Japan. And I know that even though they needed Grodd to be there to explain the time travel, he didn't fit in with the rest of the usual Batman villains. And I'm really mad that Nightwing and the rest of the Batboys didn't have all that much to do, and none of their characters really stood out. Catwoman's character design was frustrating, and Jess will go more into this, but like, her boobs were just excessively large for no reason, her skin tone, and then her blonde hair just really annoyed me for reasons. And Bruce's character design was just meh too. Like, besides his suit, I didn't really get any Batmanish vibes. I just thought it was really weird that on his head he had, like, the bat symbol. It's like he was just telling people that this is who he was, even though he was wearing a disguise. And then finally, the entirety of Japan was largely underused. Like, from the people to the places, the filmmakers didn't really capitalize on being there, so it just felt like a bunch of Westerners in Japan, and one of whom was kind of like a white savior to those who follow the prophecy, and I didn't really like that.
It was a white savior.
Yeah, it was a white savior.
Yeah.
And those, like, it didn't sit well with me. That's all.
I definitely agree with the white savior aspect of it. Like, I mean, I'm glad that the, you know, behind the scenes, like, the director and the artist, et cetera, was, like, largely Japanese. So, like, that's great. And it really helped with the aesthetics and, you know, feeling authentic. But I'm not a fan of, you know, like, let's go to this other culture and then have all the main characters who are saving the day be the white people that we already knew. Like, I feel like you could have just easily made a alternate universe Batman where Batman was already in feudal Japan. You know, mm-hmm. and as a Japanese man, and became, you know, the prophecy could have come true then without having to do the time travel so that it's our characters there. Because earlier, at some point, it may have been this year, I have no concept of time, Gotham by Gaslight came out, and that was another Batman AU. And that was, like, Victorian England. And they were all British suddenly, you know? And there was no problem there, right? So there's no difference, IMO, between that and then putting them in feudal Japan. So, yes, like you said, it gave off a white savior vibe. And then, yeah, especially with, like, the whole, like, oh, and then these villains, you know, time traveled and came to rule over different, you know, feudal areas in Japan in, like, a year or less, whatever amount of time it was. You know, like, why are all these, like, nameless Japanese characters just, like, falling for whatever rando villain showed up? I don't know. I didn't like that. Anyway, yeah, and then the whole, you know, Batman, the prophecy, and becoming legends. I also, like I said, I really liked the concept of Batman fighting without technology and having to utilize the rest of his skill set. But that didn't actually happen. They just said it. And then it was a lot of technology. And Jessica already brought up the Gundam robot, which was, like, weird to me. But, like, I get, like, you know, like she said, I get why it was there. But it didn't jive with the concept that we would have to use less technology, which we probably would not have had anyway in feudal Japan. So, again, I just feel like it would have been more interesting to literally have them be in feudal Japan. That would have solved all my problems. Not all my problems. The character design problems that y'all have talked about or will talk about, I agree with all of them, and that would not have been solved because that's just how they do. So, anyway, Bruce's personality was not it. He was an empty shell. He was so uninteresting. I've never, you know, like, Bruce shouldn't be the least interesting person in a Batman story. And he definitely was. I don't know. Yeah, he didn't really do anything. He didn't really have strong emotions. So yeah, like I said, if I'm going to recommend an AU, I would recommend Gotham by Gaslight. All right.
Bruce got on my nerves so much. I was so frustrated with him. But, like, let me back up for a minute. Because the character designs I did not like. Because I did like some of them. Mainly, I liked Harley Quinn and the Joker. Character designs I did not like, I feel like overall, all of the characters are a little RPG-ish. Like, you know, this is a video game slash movie, and I didn't like the kind of clash between the CG styles and then the 2D landscapes. And it's like, just pick a style and make it that style. But don't do the CGI thing, because that's a little weird. I would have liked to see them a little bit more. Well, I guess some of the characters were a little bit more anime, but and there's issues with that too. So, for example, Selena is way too white. Plus, both she and Harley Quinn, they also have like another iconic anime characteristic, which is having huge anime boobs that are unnecessary, but they have big boobs for no reason. And it's disproportionate to their body. Harley looks slightly better just because her character design was better, but Selena, she has the blonde hair, and then like when she's in her kimono in the Japanese style, she has the long like priestess hair, and then all of a sudden when she goes back to Catwoman, I guess she like just felt like, well, that's enough of that, let me chop off all of my hair. And there's no like really explanation to, is she wearing a wig, is she just part of a disguise? It's just kind of like a, she looks like two different characters. And then as Catwoman, like her suit is so tight. There's like this one little diamond around her midsection in the middle that's just supposed to be kind of there, but it just looks like her suit is so tight that she broke the zipper. I'm like, get close, it fits, Lena. And so it's just, there's just like little weird things about her design that was more for the male aesthetic, I think, than for it being anything that would be functional for her. And it's weird because Harley is super functional in her character design, her look, even though she still has the big anime boobs. But I feel like you notice it less. Whereas Selena, it was a little bit, I don't know, more obvious or whatever. And it's kind of like threw me off. Yeah. Bruce does not look like Bruce. Well, sometimes it looked like he didn't have, like, a chin or a neck, which is just tragic. And he stayed in, like, the same outfit or same versions of the same outfit for the whole movie. And I'm just like, lighten up, Bruce. You're in Feel Japan. Like, play dress up. Like, some of these character designs are, like, really good as far as, like, the details. You know, again, like, the Joker, how integrated he was into the Japanese culture, even down to his aesthetic. But some of the other character designs, like, I think the Bat Boys, they had little twists, but they were all twists on their costumes. And so there is little Japanese elements in their costumes, but I feel like I wish they would have let them play around a bit more. Like, the most adventurous that they got was with Jason and his woven basket. And then they didn't even explain that. Like, they could have worn, like, some yukatas, getas, something. There's so many different kind of things that they could have played with, and they just didn't. There wasn't enough of, speaking of Bat Boys, I don't think there was enough of them. It looks like you guys were saying that the family element seemed a little bit lacking, and part of that is because you barely even saw, like, the boys at all. Like, Jason was gone for 90% of the movie doing, quote-unquote, research or retcon or whatever. Damien, I didn't even, like, he was totally unrecognizable to me. Like, who is this happy child? I know it's not Dick, because he's Nightwing. He's like, is this Tim? He's like, no, then there's Red Robin. So, like, who is this? And the only reason I knew it was Damien was because he had a monkey friend. So he had, like, a pet, and I was like, oh, that must be Damien. But he didn't seem like Damien at all, which I think was a waste.
For sure.
So it's just kind of, like, process of elimination that that's the only other person he could be. Alfred was there for no reason other than the fact that you can't have a Batman movie without Alfred. Story-wise, I think the plot, like you guys were saying, it's a little contrived, and it required Bruce to be just, like, a whole dumbass throughout the entire movie. Like, I kind of disagree with Tati about the whole concept of dealing without technology, just because they had to, like, make Bruce so dumb for it to work, and, like, not him. I feel like, you know, you can make an argument that he relies a lot on technology, but even without technology, he was so, like, bereft and lost and, like, unsure of himself, which doesn't really seem like Bruce at all to me. So it's just really frustrating for him. Every single person in this film got one over on him. And it's just not acceptable. Like, the Joker played him so many times. Gorilla Grodd played him. Selena played him. And he's just like, oh, he was so, like, naive. And it was, like, just really, really frustrating.
Yeah, I feel like I agree. I liked the idea of it, but they didn't do it.
Okay, yeah.
I didn't like that they didn't do it.
Like, superhero girls with Babs did a much better job at technology and not having it than Batman Ninja. Because I think in Superhero Girl, she went on like a field trip and she thought she was going to be all, this is going to be like a piece of cake because she had her Oracle bracelet technology. And so she got there and none of it worked. So she had to like struggle her way through it.
And Superhero Girl did that in 3 minutes.
Yes, they did that in 3 minutes.
It can be done.
Batman Ninja in a 2-hour movie. I think that goes back to like the reason why that they didn't really feel like there was any heart or any Bruce in this movie, to be honest. This is more like a Joker movie than it was a Bruce movie, because I think that it's clear that the writers just liked the Joker more, and the fact that the Joker could get over on Bruce so many times. Because I almost feel like they almost wanted like the Joker to win the battle. I agree with you about the whole white savior complex of the film, and also how like weird it was or frustrating it was. Even like in the beginning when Bruce first got there, everybody in Japan was speaking English. And I'm like, I'll sway. Like, 2 years. 2 years have passed since everyone else got there before Bruce did. And, the fact that they've been able to dominate 5 feudal states in 2 years, first of all. And the fact that all of their people can speak English doesn't really make sense. And I feel like that's another place where they could have drawn more from the Japanese aspect. Mm-hmm. Instead of just calling, like, every white person master, you know, Bruce Dono or something like that. I like they did it kind of like halfway. It's like surface level, it's really cool, but I just think that there's, if they really wanted to do it, it's just kind of like an aesthetics movie for them and not really something that had any kind of depth or, you know, lasting consequences outside of this little bubble of a world that they created. So
agreed.
That is that.
And that is beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful, but it was superficial. Superficial beauty. So if you like that, you can check it out. just know that Bruce is not Bruce. I guess that's all for our little show for today. We will be taking a hiatus, if I can say the word correctly.
That word.
Hiatus next week, because it is going to be SDCC weekend, which means there's going to be a lot of shit going down. And super busy, so we might not have time to record when we normally do. So we'll just take like a week off, and then you'll have like a super packed show for the next time that we see you guys. But enjoy your summer. Make sure to send your questions to all of the shows. They're asking for like video questions, I think, now on Twitter. So send your video and your questions, and hopefully you'll get them answered at SCCC, and we'll talk about the questions that you asked and what their answers were. So thank you for joining us. We will see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.